Hour number three kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Hour number three is brought to you by Knoxville Smiles. Our friends, Dr. Stephen Malone and his staff, they want to take care of you. They want to take care of your teeth. They want your teeth. No, not in a creepy way. They just want to help you out. Restorative procedures, teeth removal, Invisalign, veneers, implants, they can do it all. Contact Knoxville Smiles today at 865-539-1776 to set up an appointment. You can take a virtual tour of their state-of-the-art West Knoxville facility at KnoxvilleSmiles.com. KnoxvilleSmiles.com. As the Tennessee portal turns, Bob, what's the latest updates here on Rocky Top?
Well, as always tends to be the case, we can talk about what we believe and see on the morning show, and then everything breaks and gets formalized after we leave.
But we've been pretty spot on in what's going to happen. I don't know if we're getting credit. I don't know if people are noticing, but I think we've been kicking ass on the basketball court.
I think so, too. I was thinking back to that, John.
You got friends in high places.
Yeah. Well, you know, it helps. And, I mean, remember back we talked about Tobey and we were saying early, we don't think that we hope it works out, but we're not sure it's going to work out. We don't think it is. It's not working out. And then we've had other ones. But Felix Akpara, he committed yesterday. It helps solve the hole in the middle, so to speak, for the Vols. Our friend Will Warren put out some post yesterday that was really telling about, you know, it was about top shot blockers in the country for this last season. And he's up there in some really high cotton. You've got Donovan Klingon, Ryan Kalkbrenner, Zach Edey, and there's Akpara right in the middle of all that statistically. So I think when you look at that, that's I think that's exciting, you know. And we were having this discussion in the green room last night watching the draft back and forth because our friend Brett from the G.I. Jake show is a little skeptical of Felix, but you and I, John, and I think Sam, we stand on business, but we stand on the belief that he might be kind of a mix of both Tobey and Jonas. Maybe Tobey's kind of motor with Jonas's ability to, you know, block shots, be a rim protector. We think it could be better in that regard. Offensively, it's a work in progress. But I'm going to put my bets on Coach Barnes, getting him developed to be, you know, I don't see him as a guy that's going to be spotting up and shooting mid-range jump shots or threes or anything like that. Let's call it what it is, but I think he's going to be effective underneath. So I think that's a big commitment. Igor Milicic, the story I'm hearing in the back channels is because everybody's like, oh, I don't know, we're hearing he's going to come, but why is there no commitment? It might be a paperwork issue. I can't speak to what has to happen, but there has been talk of some visa paperwork needing to happen, maybe when you're switching states for residency, when you're from another country. There's some things in motion there, but by all accounts, still trending to be a Vol once it's all said and done. We may hear more on that today, the way things have been moving. Chaz Lanier, obviously, he's now in the portal with a no-contact tag. We talked about that yesterday. He's now formally been crystal-balled, for what that's worth, to go to Tennessee by on three. So national pundits are pretty much saying that's how it's going to play out. So, and then no word on Cade Tyson other than some of the stuff we've heard in the past, like he didn't like the money North Carolina put in front of him, and I don't know if Tennessee's still making a run on him. That'd be – the way I look at it at this point is if Cade Tyson somehow ended up in the equation, great. But I'm not expecting it. So I think things are moving. It's been slow, but we're getting there, and it's starting to take shape. And I'm telling you, if what we've been saying already, we've got Felix, if we get Igor, and we get Chaz like we think we're going to at this point, that's starting to shape up to be a pretty good roster.
There's been a lot of buzz about Lanier.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I was uneducated on him when I talked about him earlier in the week. Like, you know, I just kind of assumed North Florida, smaller guard. You know, if he comes here, nice. Kind of as a foregone conclusion, like a depth piece type of thing. But it does seem, like you said, highly sought after. And it seems like the coaching staff thinks very highly of him too, from some of the stuff I've seen and heard people talk about, and some reports from there is like the staff sees him as, I don't want to say next year's Dalton Connect, because that's not fair. That's a phrase that's always going to be kind of thrown around. But sees him maybe as kind of the go-to scorer.
Yeah.
Like as the guy that's going to be like, hey, the game's breaking down. Who can get you a bucket? They think Lanier can be that guy that can get you a bucket there.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point, because I read something yesterday. It was a post on X that had some backstory on Chaz. And as I read it, it sure felt to me like, okay, I get it even more now as far as being just a fit in a Rick Barnes system. I'll just read a quick excerpt here. Chaz Lanier has an awesome story. He was 5'6" at the beginning of high school, had to work his way up from the freshman team to JV, then varsity, did not play AAU, held only 2 D1 offers as a senior in high school from North Florida, where he went, and Campbell. Heads to North Florida, admits he wasn't ready to play as a freshman, picked up a little more as a sophomore, played behind 3 all-league guys as a junior, admitting I was a role player, playing good defense and making threes, and I think I did a good job at that. Senior year, one of the key guys graduated and 2 others transferred. So that spot to be the guy opened up, and I felt ready for it. I mean, you just hear that whole progression, and it just feels like a Rick Barnes player, right? It's developmental. It's not some kid that came in with otherworldly talent and just expected to get his right off the bat. And
It sounds like Dalton Connect is what it sounds like. A guy that was a late bloomer in terms of size. And
I thought the same thing.
And, had to go somewhere and figure out basketball, essentially, that now has figured it out and is ready for a bigger platform. I mean, again, anybody that transfers to Tennessee, Dalton Connect's going to get brought up. And that's probably not going to be fair. But it did seem like a similar background. All right, so we got all this wrapped up. Sam, do you have any thoughts now that we kind of know we've kind of been braced for Okparo? We kind of knew that was the case, but like, do you have a take on the Okparo versus Jonas Adu? Does he even have to be as good as Jonas Adu? Because Brett was making me mad last night during the draft. He kept wanting to talk about it, and finally I was like, look, Brett, enough. I don't want to argue with you off of the radio. I don't argue for free. But like, he's dug in saying, hey, Tennessee downgraded in the portal at the center position. Do you agree or disagree with that? And does it really matter if it's only a slight downgrade?
I wouldn't say you downgraded, and I wouldn't exactly say you upgraded either. I think you just kind of – I think you replaced the production, and I think it was replaced in maybe a different way. You're maybe not getting the offensive prowess that Adu was bringing to you necessarily, but I think you're absolutely upgrading on the defensive end in terms of a rim protector and a shot blocker with Okparo. So I'm under the belief that I think – he will honestly probably fit better kind of into what we're asking for as a team. It seems like, what you're going for, you're obviously losing Dalton as that main scorer from last year's team, and it feels like you're hitting the portal to try and get 2 or 3 guys in that portal that can kind of bring a more of a balanced attack scoring. So it feels like if you have that balanced attack scoring-wise and you've got a rim protector in Okparo, I really just don't think you have to rely on him as much for the offense that you did with Adu.
Yeah, like I don't care that he only averaged 6 points a game. To me, like what I'm looking for is rim protection and toughness. Mm-hmm. Like physicality and rim protection. I mean, I know those kind of go hand in hand, but like that's what I want out of this big. Because, last year Jonas had to do some scoring, but Jonas had to do some scoring because Zakai was a little rusty coming back, but also like 2 of your 3 starters, or 2 of your other 3 stars that weren't named Dalton Connect and Zakai Ziegler, were pretty offensively challenged at times. Josiah, inconsistent and challenged at times. Vescovi, consistently challenged all of last year. I don't mean that as a pot shot at him, but like he had a bad year last year. He never really snapped out of it. If he gave you 8 points in a game, you felt good about that. Like, ideally, if you're telling me you bring in Lanier, you have senior Zakai, you have Dubar, like those guys should be more consistent scoring. Are any of them going to be as good at the top end as Dalton Connect? No, but I don't think Tennessee needs someone as good as Dalton Connect at the top end. I think they need 3 guys that can score 12 points consistently on any given night and get up to 16 or 17 from time to time. I don't need my center getting dump downs and having to make sure he's getting involved. I want my center catching lobs, and I want my center blocking shots.
I would agree with all of that. I would argue collectively this offense, if things get dialed in the right way and we get the players that we're talking about getting, I think collectively it's a better offense than what we've had.
Because there's no
question, right?
This will be the best offense you've had since, you know, the 19 team. Like, you know, going back to the Grant Williams team. The question is, can you have that same level of defense? And you know, is that offense maybe a little bit better geared towards postseason success or modern basketball? Because Grant had to do a lot of work in the post and, you know, at the free throw line to get that offense propped up. But, like, no, last year's offense was awesome when Dalton Connect was going. If Dalton wasn't, you know, playing like a top 10 pick, the offense struggled at times.
Yeah. I'm just looking now at I made mention of it a minute ago, but here's what Will Rohde wrote. This is a full list of Big Six conference players who blocked 80-plus shots last year, and there's five of them. Two of them are already going to be gone, Donovan Klingon and Zach Edey. The other three—
two studs, two monsters.
Yes. The other three, Ryan Kalkbrenner, Clifford Omoyuori from Rutgers, who's in the portal, by the way, and Felix Okpara. So
Kalkbrenner is a 7-foot monster, or at least a defensive monster that, you know, is good at blocking shots. That's good company to be in. I don't really know the guy from Rutgers, but, like,
he's a stud. He's coveted, and he just hasn't decided where he's going yet.
All you need to know about Okpara is he would have set Tennessee's all-time single-season blocks record last year.
Yeah.
He's a different level of rim protector than Jonas Adu.
Yeah, and sounds more physical, too. He's not going to— not a wilting violet, as they would say.
No, and I mean, that was everyone's biggest complaint about Jonas Adu all season, was that he was not tough enough when it came time to be tough. Whenever he was going up against some bruising physical people, he wasn't ready to answer the bell. I have more confidence sitting here today that if Tennessee goes up against Mississippi State, Okpara would fare better against Tolu Smith in that front line than Jonas Adu did.
I think you're right.
I think that's an upgrade from that perspective. I don't need him scoring 14, 15 points a game. I'm good on that. I don't need my center doing that.
And how about somebody sent me a note, you know, the picture that Tennessee basketball put out about Okpara with— he had the Vols jersey on with number 0. They're like, oh, maybe a foreshadow on Jonas. I was like, I need a foreshadow, man. That's a flex. That's we have moved on, in my opinion. That was what was happening there.
What number did he wear last year at Ohio State? Do we know?
It was a double-digit number. I want to say like 24 or something.
34.
Yeah.
34.
Nice. Definitely a shot.
Yeah, like, they just, like, say, hey, here's some extra jerseys. Like, did it say Adu on the back? Like, hey, we—
I don't know.
He left his jersey here. Just throw this one on. Like, it definitely seemed calculated, right?
Because Dubar was in a Connect jersey, too, I think, in his photos, wasn't he?
Well, that's what I'm asking. He's like, hey, we got some extra ones laying around here. Just throw the Connect on.
Could be.
Or it's— maybe they only got sizes in 0. For—
I mean, it kind of made me chuckle, though, when they were, like, foreshadowing. It's like, dude, he's visited Baylor. He's visiting Arkansas this weekend. I mean, he's gone.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah. Adu's gone. It's more— I don't— when once Adu hit the portal, to me, like, I was, you know, pretty convinced he was gone. Like,
yeah.
Maybe you would say 90% at the time. It feels like 100% now. But, like, to me, it was a door shut. It's more of a statement about Awaka is the way I took that. Like, I'd already made peace with Adu. It was more like, hey, sorry, Awaka. Like, we told you.
Yeah.
We told you we wanted you back. We told you we had to move on, though. So, like, make up your mind. He didn't. And I did, as we're talking about it, wonder how Awaka felt seeing the news. Because in the back of his mind, like, he probably thought, like, hey, at worst, I'm going back home. And maybe I kind of want to do that anyways, but I'm going to play it out. But, like, I got a spot at Tennessee, and now it's like, nah, you really don't.
I firmly believe now, again, based on what we had heard, and we talked about it, kind of portended it going into before Barnes had his press conference. And then Rick, as we said, also was kind of like being kind and said, oh, we'd love to have Tobe, but he's got to make up his mind. My opinion was if Tobe didn't say something right, you know, like within a couple hours, it was over. And he didn't. So clearly they've moved on.
I mean, it might be wrong on the timeline, Bob, but I feel like it was basically hours after that press conference that this guy entered the transfer portal, it felt like. Or at least, like, surfaced, like, to be connected to Tennessee. Maybe my timeline's off on that, but like it felt like the dominoes started really, you know, falling after that press conference for Barnes.
I mean, to take it a step further, I think that presser maybe served two purposes for Barnes. He wanted to get out there with some context on what had happened with Jonas, and then to say it was a public point of saying, make up your mind because we're done if you're not ready to join us.
Almost just a now or never. Like, yeah. here it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we sit here, if you had told me, you know, 2 weeks ago you're going to lose both Adu and Awaka, I would be pretty concerned about that. But I got to say, as we sit here now, telling me that we got Felix Akpara and JP Estrella kind of as your 1-2 punch, I'm not going to say you upgraded because I don't think that's fair to say yet, just because, like, I do think Awaka was pretty solid last year whenever he wasn't in foul trouble, and I think Adu was a, you know, an all-conference type of player. But, like, I'm not here sweating it. I'm not here thinking, wow, Tennessee, you know, completely dropped the ball here. Is that fair to say? Do you agree, Sam?
I think you got a player out of the portal that, you know, brings kind of both sides of what Adu and Awaka were bringing to your team. Like, I don't think
– yeah.
I think he's not as talented offensively in that sense. He's a little more similar to Awaka, but I think he brings that toughness and that physicality that Awaka brings and a shot blocker that Adu was, but I think a better shot blocker, obviously. So I think you're not exactly getting a better offensive player, but I think you're getting a better fit for the team. Honestly.
If he can catch the damn ball and dunk, like, that's all I need. Like, because there's too many times that Adu didn't catch the ball.
Yeah.
Just think about that. Just think about the Purdue game. He could not hold on to the ball. Could not hold on to it in the biggest game of the season. That's all. I've definitely moved past it. I do think, and again, I put trust in Barnes and the G-Reg and the whole staff. They're putting a lot of. They must have a lot of comfort in the development of JP Estrella. They must, and that's good. I'll buy it.
Estrella showed enough that I have confidence in it too.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at, you know, Barnes's track record of development, and just if you stay here for 4 years, you're probably going to be able to play by the time you leave. Like, yeah. I think that's a fair assumption. So, like, Estrella showed me enough in year one where I expect him to be a good contributor in year two.
Yeah. I think we're going to love Estrella too for just the vibes with him too. He's going to be he's already a likable player, but you can just see it. Just, you know, a little bit of the kind of the team clown, but I mean that in a good way. You know what I mean? It's like
he's a glue guy.
Yeah.
He's a dap master. He'll be the one that gives the handshakes that everyone likes, that keeps people loose. Not a clown doesn't mean bad. Clown no. doesn't mean, yeah, but like I know what you're saying. Like he's the vibes guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Energy guy.
It's funny as we sit here and I'm describing what I want my center to do, Bob. I realize that this whole time I've been chasing Tyson Chandler from the Mavericks, like that 2011 championship team that Tyson Chandler and Dirk won. I've been wanting my center to be basically Tyson Chandler. Block shots, rebound, and catch lobs and be able to finish. Like, that's all I want my center to do.
Forgot about Tyson Chandler on that team. He was key.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
He was awesome. Like, he was really good for like a 5 or 6 year stretch. And that's what I've been wanting my center to be ever since. Unless you're Nikola Jokic or Zach Edey and like you're completely dominant, I'll take that. But otherwise, just play defense, protect the rim, catch dunks. Catch the damn ball. Catch the ball.
That's right.
We'll catch a break. We'll come back. We'll hit the phone lines. Yeah. Got T-Carp on the line.
Yeah.
Stick with us, T-Carp. We'll get you after the break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. All right, let's go to the phone lines. T-Carp, thanks for holding. Top of the morning to you, brother.
Top of the morning, fellas. Just wanted to say I have all the confidence in the world with Estrella after seeing him against Purdue. That stretch was where he was against Edie. It was phenomenal. I think he held him to, what, 2 points, if that? I don't know the statistics, but just his – you know, for lack of a better term, give a damn over Adu. You know, it just proved that to me. And I'm sorry. I don't feel bad about Adu leaving. Awaka, I feel a little bit more about it. But like you guys said, I do trust Barnes on this. And I think we'll be okay. I just want, you know, at Tennessee, I think our, you know, motto is, like our players give their all. They might not be the best, but they give their all. A good example is Zakai Ziegler, you know, that example. I want a whole bunch of guys like that. I don't want a guy that crumbles in crunch time, just folds like a cheap suit. And I hate to be mean, but that's what Adu did in crunch time. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. Nope. And I think that was a part of the reason that after that game, a lot of the fan base was okay if Adu left. Like, I think he lost the fan base, and it didn't look good that your freshman thrown into the fire, like you said, looked like he gave it more of a damn, or at least looked more ready for the moment at the very least. And yeah, I think he lost a lot of the fan base at that point.
I mean, even if he felt like he was overmatched against Edie, he was like, "Hey, I'm in here for a reason. I'm going to make it work." And he did, man. He showed us a lot in that game.
Oh man, when he was off the court, or when he walked off the court, you know, got taken out. Me and my wife were, you know, applauding in the back. You know, we were watching it at home, and we were like, "Yes, that kid, that's the kid." So, you know, we were just. I don't know. We were just excited about it. Quick question. What did you – I didn't get a chance to watch the War Room. What is your thoughts on the first round real quick and three quarterbacks going in the first round? I think people
six,
were really –
Six, T-Carp. Six quarterbacks went in the first round.
Sorry, not three, six. I think Atlanta, it's never too bad to stack up on quarterbacks. I love Atlanta's move there because – I don't think that guy that they've got from Minnesota, I can't think of his name at the moment.
Kirk Cousins.
Thank you, Kirk Cousins. My goodness. I don't think Kirk Cousins is very good. I know that's terrible. I just don't think he's very good. I think you sit him, or he starts for a year or two, and you kind of do what Green Bay did with Jordan Love, and then you put Penix in there in the next couple of years. So that's my opinion on it, but I want to hear yours, guys.
Appreciate
I love
the phone
y'all.
Call.
I'll hop off.
Thank you, T-Carp. Yeah, I mean, I think Kirk Cousins is good. You know, I don't agree with you there saying he's not good. Now, is he elite? No, I don't think that. But I do think he's good. Bob, I was surprised that you said you saw some media, you know, defending the move, because it's been pretty universally, like, made fun of and clowned on my timeline, at least. I won't say I've read a bunch of articles about it or anything, but, like, I've seen a lot of people laughing at the Falcons.
No, I heard it on a show on ESPN this morning, where before I came in for our show,
okay.
Where they were saying, I think it was Chris Canty who was saying, "Hey, I get it. You know, if you're the Falcons, you've already got a, you know, you've got a bell cow running back in Bijan Robinson," which they do, as long as he gets the ball this season. And now you got a quarterback for 10 years. You know, you got Kirk Cousins for a couple years. Let Penix understudy him. It's an interesting rationale. I don't buy it. I really don't. I mean, again, it's like we talk a lot in all sorts of sports and teams about vibes, and I don't know. You went to all this trouble to get Kirk Cousins, and now, you know, the way they've handled this to boot, where he hears about it kind of on the fly, like, "Oh, by the way, we're bringing in your replacement, but you're good. You're good." I mean, I just think that's not the right way to handle it.
Okay, so I found that talking point to be interesting, like, so you think they owed him like a heads up, like the day of, like the morning of, like?
Oh,
they said they called him, you know, like before they made the pick, like, "Hey, just a heads up, we're about to take this guy." Like, I don't know when the Falcons decided they were taking Penix. I don't know, you know, at what point it was solidified. But like, when you talk about things leaking, you talk about things keeping, you know, close to the vest. Like,
yeah,
I was surprised that so many people were saying, like, "Hey, the Falcons owed him some type of explanation," because I didn't really agree with that take.
Well, it's not, to be clear, I'm not saying that they need to loop him in for his thoughts on it. It's more just, "Hey, man, you're important to us. We just spent a lot of money to get you here, but you need to know this. This is what we're doing." That's all. It's not necessarily "what do you think?" It's more like, I just think, and I agree, you don't want it to leak, but the whole notion is maybe not. It sounded like, to me, my take was it was happening like, you know, minutes before they made the pick.
You know what I mean? It sounded like whenever they're on the clock, they gave him a call, like, yeah, like minutes before. But like, I just don't know how soon you make that call. Like, because you're probably fielding offers. You're probably like still working the phones, and I don't know. It's one of those things I feel like I don't want to make it an issue if it's not an issue yet. You know what I mean? Like, if Penix didn't fall, or if they got an offer to move down, or or you know, an elite prospect, an offense. I don't know who else they would have taken or whatever. Like maybe they love Jawad or Latham. I don't know, but like,
yeah,
I don't know. I just don't. That moves so quickly with 10 minutes. I just don't know at what point you say like maybe an hour or two before you're like, hey, just heads up if Penix is there,
yeah,
we're interested in him. But like, and then Penix doesn't fall. Now it's just awkward. You've alienated your quarterback anyways. You've hurt his feelings by making the pick without actually having the player. So like, I just don't know.
Yeah,
what to do there.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's a lot of moving parts in these things, we know.
But everyone's like, oh, Kirk Cousins. Like, he was like Aaron Rodgers. Like, when Aaron Rodgers got it happen to, like, with the Packers, with Jordan Love, like, Aaron Rodgers had been there for a decade. Aaron Rodgers had been open, like, hey, we need playmakers. We need help. And instead of helping the team, it's like, hey, actually, we're going to draft Jordan Love.
Right.
You good with that, buddy? And Aaron Rodgers, of course, is going to be really mad. But, like, Kirk Cousins is not an Atlanta Falcon lifer, obviously. He's been there for a month. And it's not like that team needs – that's what everybody kept saying, right? That team's ready. It just needs a quarterback. It's not like they need receivers. They don't need offensive linemen. They got a pretty good core in place. Do they need help on defense? Yeah, like getting a defensive player probably helps that team immediately. But it's not like the Packers situation where Rodgers is pissed off and mad and like – he actually is having to, you know, elevate third and fourth round receivers. They got Drake London. They got Kyle Pitts. They got Bijan Robinson. They got a good offensive line. Like, Kirk Cousins, it's not like we promised you we're going to get you a skill position player. You're mad about us not getting a defensive player. And that doesn't hit the same to me, I guess.
No, and again, what we don't know is what they said to him. And it might have been, even if it was minutes before, like, hey, this is what we're going to be doing. It's not a problem for us. We're excited you're here. You got a ton of weapons. We're just looking at the long game. That's all. And he can't – that's kind of indisputable, really, because, I mean, Kirk Cousins, I don't know how many years he's got. It's certainly not eight, you know.
I mean, he signed a four-year contract, but the four-year contract was basically, if I remember correctly, a two-year contract. It was it was 4 years, $180 million, but $100 million guaranteed, which to me – if you pay Kirk Cousins 2 years, $100 million to maybe elevate your franchise, it's worth it. And maybe you get rid of him at 38 if he's, you know, aging and you think Penix is ready. So, like, if you tell me Penix sits for 2 years and you make the Jordan Love transition, then maybe it's a good move. Maybe it's a good move because, like, we laughed at the Packers for doing that, but now they feel at least somewhat smart. The Packers had the Aaron Rodgers MVP years. Were they the one seed? Not both years. I think they were the one seed 1 year when they lost to the 49ers.
Right.
And I think they were the two seed when they lost in San Francisco the other time. I believe is how that went down. So they had really good regular seasons, not a lot of postseason success. But like, and now they have the bridge, the transition. Like now Jordan Love looks like a top 15 quarterback, and maybe that's a guy that can be a top 7, top 8 quarterback. So if you can have that same exact thing play out if you're Atlanta, I think that's a success. I think the Packers got made fun of, but ultimately I think they made the right organizational decision. They've had good regular seasons. They didn't win a Super Bowl, and maybe they would have had they drafted a wide receiver in the first round, maybe. But now they have a quarterback that they feel good about.
Hey, Sam, help us with this. As far as – I'm thinking about the other offensive skill positions they've got. Obviously, Bijan, they have Drake London, they have Kyle Pitts. Did they get anybody else receiver-wise?
I don't think so.
I mean, anybody that's like a headliner.
Did Darnell Mooney sign with the Falcons?
That sounds like it could be the case. So now that you mentioned, I know Mooney ended up somewhere.
Let me see.
I mean, I guess my point is they.
Yeah, he's on the Falcons.
I guess there's so much.
They also traded for Rondale Moore, by the way.
That's right. That was the one. There's so much here and now in the NFL, and I get that. But there's part of me that thinks, I don't know, they have a kind of a young nucleus besides Cousins. I don't know. Maybe if you look at it from the perspective of building for the future. But it's going to be a couple of years, and, you know, you need to win now. So any talent would help.
My issue with the pick is that I just think they've drafted wrong for three straight years now. If you go back to the Kyle Pitts year, they get Pitts at fourth overall, but they pass up on Ja'Marr Chase, Jaylen Waddle, Penei Sewell, like all guys like that. They go to
Those are guys that you knew were like that's not revisionist history. Like those are guys you knew were studs at the time.
And then they go and they draft Drake London at 8 overall again, and then guys like Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave go off the board after that. And then last year they go again at 8 overall and they draft Bijan Robinson instead of a guy like Jalen Carter or someone like that. And then now you're sitting here again 4 straight years with a blue chip prospect just laying in your hands, and you go and draft a quarterback that's going to be 27, 28 by the time he's going to be starting. It just makes no sense to me.
They're acting. It seems like all their picks are luxury picks, yeah. But like they're not actually winning. Like they're making picks like they're the Chiefs and like, hey, we just won a Super Bowl, or hey, we just lost in the Super Bowl.
Right.
Hey, let's take Clyde Edwards-Helaire. It'll be fine. Like they're like acting as if they are winning, and they're not.
It was like what the Lions did last year. Like they showed enough success over drafting over the years where they had the chance to be able to go draft 2 best player available guys in the first round. But like the Atlanta's just not built like that, and like it's a division that's wide open to me where you go get one of those blue chippers and it's like so easy to just make a run with Kirk Cousins and worry about the quarterback in 3 or 4 years from now.
That's interesting. We were talking about this yesterday, Sam, after the show. I don't know if you were here or if you had left, but I talked about when the Colts had Ryan Grigson as their GM, you know, one of the big criticisms, and I see the correlation with Atlanta, was he was drafted more like it was a fantasy football team, you know, you know, real need in some of the areas that may not be as sexy. And now that you kind of recant that history with Atlanta, they did the same thing, really.
I will push back a little bit. The Drake London pick, I think, is solid. I mean, if you want to say Garrett Wilson's better, okay, but like, I think Drake London's pretty good. I think Drake London's a guy that's going to break out this year with a quarterback. I'd be shocked if Drake London didn't have like 1,300 yards this year and like 8 touchdowns. I mean, maybe the touchdowns, you know, a little random, but like, I think he's really good. I think he just dealt with really bad production. Garrett Wilson, probably better, but he got picked at 10th, 2 spots behind. So, I mean, it's.
Garrett Wilson hasn't been playing with a much better quarterback. No,
if you just make it like, hey, Drake London or Garrett Wilson, sure. But like, I think Drake London's good.
Sure, yeah, he's a good player.
I think Garrett Wilson is good. Garrett Wilson's probably better, but I didn't look at that as an egregious miss by them. I think he'll be. I think Drake London's a legit number one receiver, not top 5, top 10, or whatever. But I do think he's pretty talented.
I guess my overarching point was just you've had the 8th pick for 3 straight years now, and it just feels like you're just sitting there treading water, and you're not really doing much else.
That Kyle Pitts one, I still think is going to kill him. Ultimately, that's the one. And he could end up being a pretty good tight end, but 4th pick, man, good Lord.
He's just surrounded by like all pro level players too, or at least like Pro Bowl, like really good starters too. Like it looks worse when you talk about Kyle Pitts, when you see Jamar Chase and Jalen Waddle and Penei Sewell and J.C. Horn and Patrick Surtain and Devonta Smith, Justin Fields, whatever, Micah Parsons, Rashawn Slater, like all those guys are like borderline all pro players.
Yeah.
And you drafted a tight end. Like that one I agree with, Sam. That one you wasted a top 5 pick. And you know, if you take Jamar Chase instead of Kyle Pitts, then you don't take Drake London the next year, and maybe you're building a different type of team. However, I will say, I do think Atlanta deserves a chance with the quarterback. Like, if Drake London and Bijan and Kyle Pitts are all of a sudden the greatest show on turf this year, and those guys are all like putting up numbers when Kirk Cousins is actually getting them the ball, and you just realize how bad Desmond Ridder was and how bad Marcus Mariota was, I do think that's possible, and I do think that changes how we view the last couple drafts. To me, the worst pick they made that you didn't even mention, I thought the Desmond Ridder pick was terrible at the time.
Sure.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, that was at the top. Was that the top of the 2nd round, or was that 3rd round?
I think 3rd.
Okay. Maybe 3rd, but like I just thought that was a wasted pick. I thought that got stuck.
Yeah, that was a
waste. And they pass on really like aggressively pursuing Lamar Jackson so that they can, you know, give Ridder another year. Like, to me, that seemed dumb. That's the most egregious thing I think they've done. Yeah, it was a 3rd round, so I guess it's not as bad. I thought it was a 2nd round.
It just feels like they built, like they spent a lot of years building a roster, waiting for that quarterback to come to them, and then they go sign the quarterback, and they're like, oh, let's just draft one.
And again, I do think like this year's team would be better with a good defensive lineman. But 3 years from now, we might have a different conversation if Michael Penix is actually ready to take over in year 3, and he'll still be cheap, and you get rid of Kirk Cousins, and you know, you have a quarterback that's in his age prime, not, you know, obviously like his playing prime, because he'll be basically starting from scratch. Do you buy this at all in terms of, don't want to say buyer's remorse, but at least like an insurance policy of like, hey, this guy's coming off of a torn Achilles.
Yeah.
And like he's hurt and like maybe he doesn't play well. Like is there a scenario where Kirk Cousins is actually benched for Michael Penix before the end of the year? Like if Cousins just doesn't have it coming off the torn Achilles, or are they kind of stuck at least for a year of letting him play?
I'd be shocked if he got benched in terms of performance. Yeah.
A torn Achilles at 36 is scary, though. Like, I think we're all just kind of like penciling both him and Aaron Rodgers in for being like really good. And, you know, there's only been really one quarterback that's ever come back from a torn Achilles and not really had a big drop off. And that was Dan Marino, like one of the most talented quarterbacks of all time, who was also like not necessarily as old as either one of these guys, I don't think. So I wonder if that was them being like, hey, yeah, we need a backup quarterback because our guy's old and he's, you know, just coming off of an injury. And they always talk about Achilles injuries like ruining the rest of your body. Like they say, once the Achilles goes, everything else in the legs start going. So like that crossed my mind too in this draft.
Yeah, and it's funny, we're sitting here talking about all this. It's like there's part of me I'd love to see Michael Penix get the shot and play. He's a likable player.
I like the guy.
I agree. It just felt really early. That's all.
You might be right there too, John, because I feel like if you're thinking that it's a project for a long time, you would just kind of take J.J. McCarthy, the guy that's younger and stuff like that. But I think they probably think that Penix is more pro-ready at the start.
I think it's a little bit of an insurance policy. Because, yeah, like if you told me they drafted J.J. McCarthy and it's like, hey, we're going to let him sit for 2 years, I think we judge this differently. I think it's Penix's age that really is like the head-scratcher.
And his injuries himself.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But, like, I think it's really just his age. Because, like, if he was like, hey, he's 23 when he starts in 2 years or 24 when the contract's up, it's a different story. But it's like, hey, he's going to be 27, bro. He's already 24. I think that changes the conversation.
Like, I feel like this is probably what the media coverage would have been if Hendon Hooker got picked in the first round, honestly.
I'd say people would have called, you know, Hendon a little bit more of a reach. And also, of course, the ACL tear would have changed that a bit. So I don't think it's exactly apples to oranges. But, like, the age thing, you're right, like. But we went through that list yesterday, and, you know, Joe Burrow was pretty old, too. But he was also starting from day one. We keep calling Michael Penix, or at least, like, I about did just then, call him a project quarterback. That's not the case. It's really just, like, he could maybe start for another team day one, but, like, he's not going to in Atlanta, which makes it the head-scratcher. Like, if Oakland, or Vegas, excuse me, had drafted him, or Denver had drafted him, he's starting from day one, I think that's okay. Does it feel a little bit like a reach? Yeah, maybe. But, like, hey, it's okay. But Atlanta...
Taking an investment pick at 8 is crazy.
Yeah. Taking an investment pick after you paid a guy $100 million guaranteed and $180 million contract, that's the head-scratcher. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Michael Penix is going to be good in the NFL either. Like, I don't know.
I think he'll be better than Bo Nix.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think I would agree with that. I don't know if he'll be better than J.J. McCarthy, but...
Yeah.
Who knows? Okay, Michael Penix, Atlanta Falcon. Big Penix energy down in the A.
You know, Prime is pissed off right now. He's like, what the hell? Shador was supposed to go there.
Yeah.
That is a wrinkle, and maybe that's a part of it, man. Like you joke, but like maybe a part of it is like, hey, if you need a quarterback, you got to take one of these six because next year's class, it's Shador Sanders, it's Quinn Ewers, and like, Jalen Milroe and like none of those guys.
Carson Beck.
Yeah, none of those guys seem like
home runs.
Yeah, none of those guys seem like big time prospects. So maybe it's like, hey, we don't want to be in a position of needing a quarterback next year. It was one of those though where like the mock draft made you say, "Whoa, Michael Penix at 8 to Atlanta? What? They need defense. Yeah, they do, but quarterback's still the most important position."
Our guy Brett came on the Discord for the morning show and asked, just all it said was Rattler or Levis, ? I don't know what that means.
That's offensive.
What the hell kind of question is that? Levis.
That's offensive.
I don't even know what that means.
Is he just trying to get some ammunition to get Marcus riled up? Brett's always just poking around trolling. He ain't going to get me. He's trying to get me last night. I was like, I ain't arguing with you, Brett. I wouldn't mind doing just like a bi-weekly podcast with him, though. Just 40 minutes of sports arguments.
Yeah,
I do love itch a little bit for you.
I do love arguing. Yeah, like so, like just Skull and Brett nonstop and arguments would really scratch that itch that I need scratched. Me and Bob's a little too chummy. We get along too much.
I heard you come in on their show saying I need a fix. You know, because there's too much get along here.
Yeah, and I don't mean that in a bad way. Just you guys aren't morons, and they are, and it's easier to argue with morons. I respect you two. So like, neither one of you say anything too egregious, but.
Yeah, we disagree, but it's
over like a chocolate bar, not a sports take.
Yeah. And we're boys, so right, everything's good. Like you said earlier, you know, you get along with people, you can do it.
Right. So I want to just go with Brett, just mano a mano. Just treat it like a sport, like Skip Bayless used to do. You're entering the arena, me versus Brett.
That could be a 37 club exclusive there.
The problem was, like, I don't know if his takes are just organic. Because like sometimes you know like you'll get into a conversation then you'll realize you're on a different spot, it's like you have different takes, and that's when it's organic. Or if he's just like, hey, I got 10 things I feel great about, and then I just argue the other side. I don't know how it would work because I don't want to poke around and prod and find the things we disagree on. I just want it to be straight 30 minutes of arguing.
Well, I think you're laying the groundwork. He's listening. He just wrote, you guys didn't answer the question, though.
What's the question? Will Levis. Yeah, that's the question. Will Levis. Do you not hear me say it? I said Will Levis. And well, the question, there's not a question. All it is just two names. What's the question? Which one's more attractive? Will Levis. Which one has a stronger arm? Will Levis. Which one's already in the NFL and on a team? Will Levis. Which one's better in college? Probably Spencer Rattler. Like, I don't. What's the question here? Didn't answer the question. Like he's Walter Cronkite trying to nail down some journalism.
Mike Wallace.
Shut the hell up. You didn't ask a question. You put a question mark. There's no question.
This is great, man. We're laying the groundwork, Sam. It's happening.
We need this for John.
Who would I rather have on the Titans next year? Will Levis. Like, what the hell is the question? I think Spencer Rattler has a chance of being good. Like, if you're asking me Spencer Rattler or Bo Nix, I'm probably taking Spencer Rattler.
Yeah, I agree.
I might take him over Penix. Hell, I might take him over Drake May. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with Spencer Rattler.
Not over the golden.
Not over my beautiful baby boy with the golden rocket arm. Come on. I'm not taking him over there. I got to say, though, in the draft room last night, in the green room, there's a lot of Will Levis slander out there. I was getting a little itchy.
It's all right.
CBS has got Rattler going in the third round to the Raiders. That's actually kind of interesting.
Hey, they didn't get a quarterback, right? So no. Like, they might start for him next year. He might have a third-round rookie starting. I mean, it's possible.
Yeah.
Last call on the other side. Stick with us.
At First Bank.
Get ready for it.
Last call here on the weekend, or before we get to the weekend. Last thoughts on the Tennessee basketball transfer portal, Bob. Anything that you're really paying attention to? It seems like Igor's waiting on his paperwork, like you said. Roster going to be kind of solidified at that point in terms of actual rotation players. And something you really notice, you know, we talk about the offense. It seems like Tennessee has really embraced the analytics side of it. Our friend Jordan Moore, overtime contributor, fan-run sports contributor, talks about the three-point percentage and rim percentage of each player. 40% from three, 77% at the rim for Dubar. 44% from three, 70% at the rim for Lanier. Milicic, 37.6% from three, 73.5% at the rim. Okpara right there at 69% at the rim. Like, layups and threes. Be good at shooting. Be good at finishing.
Feels a little Alabama-ish to me.
I can't believe somebody else cracked the code of shooting threes and being able to finish around the rim is good for basketball.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nate Oates.
Yeah, the other one Jordan wrote was to us was last season the combination of Triple J, Connect, Vescovy, and Adu attempted 179 mid-range shots. Dubar, Milicic, Lanier, and Okpara combined only attempted 75 last season. So it's kind of interesting. And as we put this roster together, we'll need to get Jordan on to talk a little more about all this. This is pretty fascinating. I hadn't looked at it this way, and it does draw some parallels to a team like Alabama.
The difference is I think Tennessee will really focus on the defensive side of the ball while doing it. But, yeah. You know, we've talked about it the last couple months, but credit to Rick Barnes, man, like for evolving and and adapting. A lot of his contemporaries just decided to pack up their bags and run for the hill and retire instead of dealing with NIL and dealing with the new landscape of college basketball. And instead, Rick Barnes said, we're going to be good at NIL, we're going to be good at the transfer portal, and we're going to play modern basketball. We're going to play fun offensive basketball, and I give him a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, and I, the last thing I'll say on this, too, is we've had this conversation back and forth, and I've talked to some of the people and you know that are close to Rick, and it's like, you know, is, could this be the last year? Maybe, but it, also there's a theory that the way he's wired, it's like, what I don't know what he's going to do if he's not coaching. You know, he's one that is, he just lives and breathes it. I've talked about it before. Whenever we talk, we can just talk ball forever. That's all he wants to talk about sometimes. So maybe he looked at it as, again, this year it's like, man, if I'm going to stay in this and try to like it, I'm going to have to adjust.
The way Tennessee and Rick Barnes have put this roster back together, it deserves a Best of the Week nomination. As we get ready for Best and Worst of the Week, Sam, please hit the music.
All right. Playing.
Sounds great, as usual. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe you should sing moving forward.
Bob, who was your best and worst of the week?
Well, that was going to be one of them. That was definitely a best.
Sorry.
No. That's fair. I think it's it's true. I think
stole Bob's best.
That's you know, it happens. It's
this
okay.
This is now Bob's official second best of the week.
No, I'm going to have to come back to a best. No, I do think that that deserves a best. We're watching. It's been I would say the takeaway from this is I have not felt – even when Adu and Iwako were leaving, I've never been, you know, we had a little bit of cause for concern, but how different is it versus like a school like Kentucky right now, again, starting from scratch? And it's like, I felt like we're going to be okay. I really believe it. And when I heard Rick say we're going to be okay, then I believe it. And so, I don't know. I feel good about what's developing there. I really do. As far as my worst of the week, this one strikes home for me. This is in auto racing, IndyCar. Roger Penske, who is the GOAT when it comes to open wheel racing here in the U.S., actually is the owner of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, has a year in, year out dominant racing team. They've been cheating and they've been caught by the league. They've had to forfeit some of their team wins. There's a feature called push to pass in IndyCar racing, where you have the ability to essentially accelerate your car to get into passing mode, and you only have a set amount of them for each race. And they've kind of gamed that system. I don't know all the details, but the truth is, when you've got the guy who is the face of the sport, pays so much attention to detail in auto racing, and has kind of feels a little like what you know, Belichickian, you know, with what happened with the Patriots and stuff, or at least was alleged. But this is a big deal in IndyCar racing. It's a sport that's been struggling to get back into the mainstream and be popular. This is not a good look for him.
I mean, to me, when you're talking about that, it just sounds like the horse racing too, Bob Baffert,
right?
Kind of being the face of the sport, the human face of the sport, just constantly linked with cheating. So yeah, that's where my mind went. My best of the week probably got to go just to Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets, just continuing to be a machine and just win these playoff games, answer the bell, flip the switch, whatever you need to say. They're primed for another deep run. I also just have a combo, best and worst. I can't quit laughing at the Jacksonville Jaguars war room and Tony Khan and just kayfabe's alive, man. As a wrestling fan, it does make me happy to see that he went through with the bit. It's like, you know, Vince McMahon used to get his ass beat on screen, and he never showed up on national TV wearing this. So credit to Tony Khan for the neck brace. Again, I still think it's gonna be a bad meme though. Whenever they lose, his dad sitting behind him with the villainous mustache makes it even better. No time for yours, Sam. Sorry.
That's fine.
No time for you. The G.I. Jake Show coming up next. Hope everybody has a great weekend. We'll recap everything from the weekend Monday morning. Join us. Stay locked in on Fan Run Radio.
Hey guys, it's Logan Quinton from the 920 Podcast.